Morgan thought he would go for a walk one morning, and on leaving his house, became unwell, and as we so often say, dropped down dead. He tells of his passing, and the meeting with his parents in the spirit world, also very interesting. And here he is, Charles Morgan, to speak of his experiences of death and of life in a world of spirit.
My name is Morgan.
Morgan?
Yes. I don't think you would remember. My name is Charles Morgan.
Charles Morgan.
I am very much aware, indeed I have been very much aware, of all the interest in the work that's been done over the last number of years. Must be getting on now for 10 years or more since you and he came together for this work.
Yes.
Yes, time has passed.
Yes.
And I think, considering everything you've done remarkably well in that time, I hope to goodness that you will have many more years yet. I was so sorry to hear about his trouble, his operation and all that, but I was kept well informed by Marshall as to what was going on, and Marshall was most hopeful. It was a sticky time, but he came through all right.
Well, Mr. Morgan, could you not tell me something about yourself, how you passed over and what you're doing?
Oh, dear.
Yeah?
Well, I want to know about my death.
Yes, how you...
Oh, dear.
How you, your reactions, you know, when you passed over.
A depressing thing.
Yes.
My reactions, I don't know whether they were so very different to the vast majority of people's reactions. All I know is that I was walking, and in your world, walking, I was out, and I felt a bit dizzy and stood up against a fence. And the next thing was that I was still standing up against the fence, and there was a crowd of people standing looking at what was obviously my body. I didn't realize it at the time, lying at my feet.
Yeah.
And I was saying to the people, oh, I'm all right, don't worry, I'm all right. And they weren't hearing a word I was saying. They were so interested in this object, which of course I realized almost soon afterwards was me. But I was trying desperately to attract attention from that to me, because I couldn't see that as me at all, and yet I realized in a sort of subconscious way that what they were interested was the old me, but not me. I stood there and I was desperately trying to make them know I was perfectly all right. I suppose now, looking back on it, I must have had a seizure or stroke or something, and I must have lost consciousness for a few seconds. The next thing I knew was that I was feeling perfectly fit and perfectly well. There were these people standing there, all concerned about this object lying down on the pavement. Then I saw this ambulance come up and put this thing, this body of mine, as I realized it was, in the ambulance. I thought, now what do I do now? I don't just stand here. Should I get in the ambulance with it? But I didn't. In fact, so far I knew really anything very much, the thing had driven away and my old body was gone away. And people dispersed, and I thought, well, now what do I do? Well, I was standing up here against this railing, this fence. Might as well go home. So I walked back, and I was very sort of all mixed up inside. I thought, well, what has happened? I just couldn't visualize the fact in the sense that I was dead. As a matter of fact, I began to think, well, I'm in some sort of peculiar dream or something which I should wake up out of. But anyway, next thing I knew was I was walking up the 3 steps to the house, and then I put my hand in my pocket automatically for my key, and I realized that, well, there was no key there, and what I thought was my pocket didn't exist.
Yes. Oh,
so I thought, well, what do I do now? Can't stand outside my own front door. And what perturbed me was that I, by putting my hand, it's the only thing that brought me to, in a sense, to some realization of things, I suppose, putting my hand in my pocket and finding no keys there. And then I looked down and I realized there wasn't a pocket because there weren't any trousers. And instead of trousers, I seemed to be wearing some sort of diaphanous something or the other. I don't know what it was. It looked like material, but it seemed as if I was in a billowy cloud or something. I thought, my God, what's this? And I thought, well, what do I do? What's happening? I could see myself being taken in for indecent exposure or something, and yet I realized that I couldn't be, because that body of mine was in that car thing, that ambulance thing, and yet I just didn't make head or tail of it. I was so confused, and the next thing I knew was, as if for a fleeting second I must have lost consciousness, I found myself in my bedroom. I thought, well, that's funny, I don't remember getting through the door because I got no key to open it. And I thought, well, at least there's a chance now to get a suit, put something on, make myself look respectable. But I went to what was my wardrobe, and I put my hand out to take hold of the knob of the thing, and every time I put my hand, I couldn't feel anything. Uh-huh. It wasn't any more solid, you see. And I thought, well, what is all this about? I was so perturbed, and I thought, well, I'll sit down a minute, and I went to sit on what was the bed. I could see the bed, and I felt that I was sitting, and yet I wasn't sitting on anything solid. I was a most peculiar sensation. I felt as if everything around me, which looked so real, wasn't real anymore. And I felt myself. Yes, I felt solid enough, but nothing else in the room. I went round the room trying to touch things, mantel shelf, clock, and all various things. Nothing seemed solid anymore. I thought, well, I hope to God I soon wake up out of this. I just couldn't appreciate then fully that I'd actually died, and yet I'd seen what was me being put into this ambulance thing. I thought, I don't know, this is all so stupid. And I thought, well, I must be dreaming. This isn't possible that I'm dead, because if I were dead, I wouldn't be conscious of all this. I would, if I was in any sort of conscious state being dead, I'd be conscious only, obviously, of things of another world, not this. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite know what to do. Anyway, I sat down on my chair, which was beside the bed. That didn't seem solid, and yet I must have had some realization of solidity, because I certainly was in a sitting position, and I put my hands out to the sides of the chair, and it didn't seem, to my touch, didn't seem solid, and yet I was sitting, and yet I wasn't sitting. And I thought, this is the most strange thing, what can I do next? Then I thought to myself, well, I wonder if I'm dead, which I don't think I am, I must be in some sort of dream which I wake up, might be just as well if I lie on the bed instead of sitting in this chair. Why I should think that, I don't know. And I suppose I sort of thought in some weird sort of way, by lying on the bed, I would come out of my dream and I'd then be back as normal. So I got onto the bed. I know this sounds stupid, because then I lie on the bed, I'm conscious of lying on the bed, because I can see the foot of the bed, and yet I feel no weight under me, and yet I'm being supported in some strange way. A terrific amount of feeling of lightness all the time, and I thought, well, this is the lightness of my head. And then I thought to myself, how can it be lightness of my head? My head's on my body, and that thing going off to what obviously is a hospital. And I thought, this is all so stupid, this is just a silly dream. Mm. And I thought, well, best to close my eyes and just sort of think of nothing. I thought that it would probably be of some help. I would lose consciousness. I closed my eyes, and I thought, as I tried to think of nothing, but all the time I was thinking of nothing, it seems as if all the time I was thinking of something. Mm. As my mother suddenly came into my thoughts, or so it seemed. But it wasn't my mother as I last remembered her, but she was a very old lady when she passed over. She was well into her 80s, getting on for 90. And still seeing my mother in my mind's eye as an old lady, I could see her as I'd seen her so often in photographs in an album that we'd had, ever since I could remember her sitting in a chair, looking very smart and very elegant, with a very large hat, with an enormous feather, which always as a child fascinated me, this enormous feather curled around his head, and standing at her feet in a little suit with a big yellow straw hat and a little sailor suit. I always remember this photograph. I suppose then I would have been about 5 or 6. And that's how I remembered my mother. That is how she was as a younger, much younger woman, not as I last remembered her. And as I was thinking, it was as if I was seeing my mother in this photograph. There she was, standing at the foot of this bed, looking radiant. And I thought to myself, well, this is also so extraordinary. Why should I see mother as she was at that time in her life, when she was a young, vital woman? And of course, as I saw her, she was dressed exactly identical in every remembrance that I have of that photograph. And somehow, it was as if I could hear her voice speaking. And I could hear her saying, now, don't worry, don't worry, I'm here. I'm sorry I'm late. And I thought to myself, it was most peculiar, as if I was listening and talking to myself, and I was saying to myself, what the devil does she mean about being late? And what's she doing there, standing looking like that? Because that looks to me as if it's that photograph come alive. And I was thought, well, I must be going through a very weird dream. And I could hear her saying quite distinctly in a very strong, clear, firm voice, don't worry, dear. I'm sorry I'm late. It's perfectly all right. And I could hear myself saying in reply, what am I doing here? And what are you doing there? What's all this about? I must be dreaming. And then I heard her say, you're not dreaming, dear. You're not dreaming. You're here with me. I said, well, what do you mean I'm here with you? I'm here in my own room, lying on my own bed. And you know, Mother, you've been dead many years now. She said, but my dear, that's exactly what's happened to you. You're dead. Now you're with me. Well, I said, I remember hearing myself say, but then if I'm dead, why am I here in my room? And what are you doing there all dressed up like that, as you were many years ago in that photograph? She said, oh, well, I did that for various reasons. One, because I thought it would help you, and also you always was very fond of that hat particularly. You remember how you used to pull my leg later years, and you used to say to me, oh, you did used to doll up in those days, you don't seem to bother now. Because I tell you, Mother got to the point where she never bothered very much about dress, and it used to rather annoy me, because she'd always been a very smart woman up to the last few years of her life. And it was a little joke between us, and I used to make Mother dress up a bit, and I used to often do her hair for her in the last few months and year of her life, and just to try and keep her tidy. And she used to be such a fussy woman in earlier years. And she said, don't you remember, dear, how you used to do my hair, and how you used to do things for me, and used to fuss around me, and how you used to try and make me keep up to the mark, as you say. So I thought I'd better come looking smart to fetch you. And I'm sorry I'm late. I knew that you were soon coming, because I sensed and felt it for some few days, because although you don't know it, she says, you had a stroke, you know. You had a heart attack, and your heart's been bad for some time. I said, Mother, don't be stupid. I said, oh, my heart has been perfectly all right. I've never had any signs of heart trouble. She said, my dear boy, she said, you know you've had heart trouble for at least 12 months, and we've been with you constantly. And I knew that sooner or later that you would be coming any time, any day. But she said, you know, I couldn't be here earlier today, and I didn't get the realization or warning quickly enough, but I came as soon as I could. And what seems perhaps a long time to you was only a few seconds, not very long since your body was taken away to the mortuary. I said, mortuary? What are you talking about mortuaries for? I said, here I am, perfectly all right. I said, but I would like to have some decent clothes. I said, I can't open my wardrobe. She said, you don't want to worry about your wardrobe. You don't want to start thinking about that. If you want to wear a suit, then all you have to do is think. Think hard about a suit, she said, and you'll find you're wearing a suit. I said, Mother, how can you dress yourself just by thought? She said, that's exactly what people do, though, but they don't always go deeply enough into it to analyze it. Of course you can wear a suit, you can wear what you want, you can wear a Japanese kimono if you want to, which reminds me, Mother, I said, do you remember that kimono you used to wear? And she said, oh, that. She said, I've got a much better one now, because the one that I was referred to, the one she'd had, that I'd brought back many, many years ago on one of my trips when I went to Japan. She was so fond of it, but she wore it out, but she still clung to it, even to the end, you know. Anyway, she was laughing and joking away, and it all seemed so natural. She said, come on, she said, get off that bed, don't be such a lazy boy. I said, I'm not a boy, I'm a man over 70. She said, you're not a man over 70, you're only 20. You look at yourself. I said, what do you mean, look at myself? She said, turn your mind inward, she says, and you'll see yourself as you are, and you'll feel as you really are, not as you think you were. I said, Mother, you confuse me. I said, you tell me I've just died, that I feel perfectly all right, excepting that I can't visualize myself as being dead. All this seems so odd, and yet at the same time so natural. She said, of course it's natural. It's odd because you don't understand it. She said, you're not old anymore, and you are dead. Now come with me. She said, come along, come with me. She spoke to me as if I was a child, which in a sense, under these circumstances, I was. So I took hold of her hand, as she asked me to. And the next thing I remember was that it was as if I was floating is the only word I can use, through the ceiling, out into the air, high above the chimney tops we seem to be going. It was the most peculiar sensation. I felt like Peter Pan.
Oh, that is awfully interesting.
I know this must sound terribly stupid, but I said to her, as I seemed to be floating through the air, and I could see, it's the most extraordinary sensation, you know, because I was conscious of Mother at this moment, and yet I couldn't see her. And it's as if I was probably, it's because my mind was so confused, and at the same time, I was so fascinated, looking down underneath me, all the chimney tops, and me going through the air like this. And for some reason, all I could think about was Peter Pan, and Mother is Wendy. I know this sounds so stupid, but I said to myself, this can't be true. This is one of those stupid dreams that one does have. Whatever all this is about, it's not what Mother says. It's just a stupid dream, and I should wake up. And anyway, I was floating away, and it wasn't so far, inasmuch that I could see underneath me everything, the winding road, and then gradually we seemed to be coming to the open sea. I thought, oh, goodness, this is ridiculous. If I were dead, and this really were my mother, I'd be going up to heaven. I wouldn't be floating over the earth like this. I wouldn't be interested. Anyway, we seemed as if we were floating or moving in the air for a very long time. And it seemed as if we were going over France, because I could see that we were going over the channel, and I could see the lights and the harbour, and I could see so much that I associated with years previously, on the few odd occasions that I had been in an aeroplane. It all seemed most weird and most wonderful. And then I thought to myself, this is unbelievable. No one would believe this. If I wake up and tell them I dreamt all this, they say, oh, it was just stupid. It's not possible, and it's just a stupid dream. Anyway, I must have risen higher in the atmosphere or something, because everything became invisible. I just couldn't see anything anymore. It's as if I was floating in cloud, and there was illumination. It was brightness, intense brightness, which I took to be the sun, but I since found it wasn't. And I was floating and floating and floating through this billowy, billowy cloud. It seemed for ages and ages and ages. And then all of a sudden, on the horizon, or what I suppose one called the horizon, I could see an intense golden glow. And it seemed as if I was going further and further and further into this glow. It seemed to be permeating everywhere surrounding me. And as I became more conscious of this, so it began gradually to take some shape. It's the only way I can describe this. And it was as if I was entering, well, I suppose you can only say it was a vast landscape of beautiful countryside. There were trees, there were hedges, there were bushes. And I could see that there were here and there dotted about little houses. But everything seemed to have a golden glow. There seemed to be no other colour at all but this golden, golden glow everywhere. But I'm still floating above this in a sense, although conscious of it just around and about me. And I began to wonder what all this was. And gradually it seemed as if we were descending or going lower. And as I went lower and lower and lower, the golden glow seemed to lose itself. And where there were hedges and trees and houses and so on, gradually began to be suffused with colour. The ground seemed to, where it was obviously, to my appearance, grass, took on a beautiful green shade. The trees seemed to be green and brown and russet, all various shades. And the houses began to take more definite shape, and I could see that the walls were white, and the doors and the window frames looked colourful and painted various colours, presumably according to the individuals who lived there. And then gradually we seemed to come down or descend and enter into what was a very pretty house, set in a garden is the best way to describe it. And there were flowers everywhere, profusion of flowers, all colour, all different types. There were daffodils, and there were tulips, and there were narcissi, and all the flowers I remember that my mother and I were so fond of, was we were both great gardeners in other years. Mother was always out in the garden until she was too ill to go. And I could see this pretty little house with its lattice windows and its pretty little door, which was around this door there was I always remember now that it was very like a house we had in my younger days when we were together, the whole family, in the countryside. It was a house which my mother was particularly fond of, in which she brought all we children up, in which my father and all of us spent possibly, I think, the happiest days of our life. It was almost, you might say, a replica of this house, and it was so familiar, and I could hear myself saying, "Oh, Mother, this is so like the house we used to have in Norfolk." She said, "Yes, dear, it is. It is the house we used to have in Norfolk." I said, "Don't be stupid, Mother. How can it be that house? If we're dead, then that house is on earth, if it's still in existence. It can't be." She said, "But it is that house. The house we had on earth was the earthly house of our earlier years, but this is what we have created by the love that we had for the house and the happiness that we had in it and the family life that we shared there. This is it. This is the reality of it." Anyway, we went in, and there was my father sitting, as I always remembered him sitting of an evening, in the chair, a red chair, which he was so fond of, a red velvety chair. I don't think it actually was velvet, but it was something which looked rather like velvet, studded a chair with very heavy legs. I know it was a very impressive chair. It was always his chair, and we children never sat in it. I think once or twice I sat in it when he wasn't around, because it always fascinated me. It always looked upon his father's chair. There he was. But he looked so young and so virile, so as I remembered him as a young man. And there he was sitting, obviously waiting. And I thought to myself, "Oh, this is just too fantastic. It's like as if I've gone back 40 years or more to my youth." And in the window there were the little pots of flowers that Mother so loved, and I remember how she used to brush the leaves down with vinegar, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And she used to love these potted plants. It was about the only thing that I didn't like, but Mother always had them in the window. She was always so fond of them. It's exactly the same. On the big circular table there was this heavy chenille cloth thing that Mother had with bubbles on. I know as children how we used to look forward to the meals, and how we used to lay that table and put the cloth back afterwards, and the potted plant would go in the centre. I remember that table so well with its big carved legs like lion's claws, lion's feet. I remember it all so well. And there it was, a replica of it all, but so real, so beautiful, and yet there was something about it that had a glow. I couldn't even begin to describe it. Anyway, my father gave me a great welcome, put his arm round me and said, "Well, old chap, you've done it, you've done it." I thought to myself, "Yes, done what? and I still couldn't get this idea into my head that I was dead. He said, come, sit down, let's talk about things. So I said, talk about what you talk about. It's wonderful to see you and Mother, but why didn't you come when Mother came? Why didn't you? He said, I wanted to stay here and be here to welcome you when you arrived. I knew Mother would be all right. Besides, Mother wasn't alone, you know. I said, what do you mean Mother wasn't alone? Mother was the only one that came. He said, my dear boy, he said, don't be so stupid. You may not have seen them, but there were dozens of people there. I said, you mean dozens of people? I only saw Mother. He said, you may not have seen the others because at the moment you're not in a position to see. You can only see that which you yourself made possible. But there are lots of other people there, wonderful people that you'll get to know, that we should introduce you to, that will be able to tell you much more than even Mother and I can tell you. And what really matters now is for you to be at home and be comfortable and be happy and relaxed and not worry about all this nonsense they call death. I said, but you know, you keep saying this business that I'm dead, but I'm not dead. He said, of course you're not dead, really, but the world thinks you're dead, and since they don't understand anything else, there's not very much you can do about it. He said, don't you realize that there's something very different about you? He said, look, come and look in here. So I went with him and looked into what appeared to be a full-length mirror, and looking back, I remember that mirror so well. It always stood just on the top of the staircase, which I always thought as a child was a stupid place to have a mirror. But because it always looks as if you're going to walk in and bump into yourself. But for some reason or other, that mirror was always at the top of the staircase. And I realized that it was very nice for the ladies. But at the time, I know Mother used to often stand there and just preen herself before she went downstairs to welcome the guests when they were arriving for a party or something. Anyway, I looked at myself in this mirror, and there I was, as I remember myself, in King Edward's day, looking so young, and my hair was parted, and I remember seeing the quiff that I had that used to, no matter how much I used to brush my hair, it always fall down just over my eye. And there I was in a suit that I remember so well, a thin striped dark grey suit and a high collar. Oh, I remember myself so well in those days. And there I was dressed so much the same. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm dead, why am I looking like I did in Edward's, King Edward's days? It all seems so odd. Why should I have to look like that? Why not look as I did in George V's time, or even for that matter as a little child in Victoria's time? It all seems so weird, so mixed up. Father said to me, oh, don't worry about that. He said, all you've got to think about is that you are you, and you're very much alive, and you've got no aches, no pains. I said, look, Father, I never had an ache or pain of any consequence in my life. I didn't even know that I was going to die. I didn't even know I had heart trouble, and so on and so on. He said, you were lucky. He said, you must be grateful that you didn't have aches and pains and sickness and all the rest of it, and you're lucky that you came as you did. He said, it's just like you, of course, who got down dead in the street. So there you are. You can't help it. At the same time, you should be grateful. And anyway, went on, he laughed and chatted away, and I began to feel relaxed, I suppose, the first time. Began to accept it. I thought, well, I really have to accept this then, that I'm dead. But why is it there's so much fuss made about death? I remember myself when I used to go to chapel in the old days. Mother was a great chapel girl. We used to sing the hymns, and I used to find it all very entertaining as a boy. And later, as I got older, I began to think, well, it's a way of life. One accepts it, but I don't really believe in it. I read one or two books in my time. I read one or two things about what you've termed spiritualism. And I think then it began to dawn on me. I'd heard something about this business before, through spiritualism and all that nonsense. But I'd never taken it too seriously. And my father said, he said, you're on the right track now, boy. We used to decry that, Mother and me and all of us. We used to say it was the will of the devil. But my goodness me, what a difference it would make if people knew and understood about that. You wouldn't be bewildered as you've been, and as Mother and I and others were. We'd know what had happened. We'd understand more sincerely and deeply about these things. Tragedy is that we don't know these things under the earth, which is, I think, a great pity. Because I think if we knew these things and understood them, it makes such a vast difference to our lives when we're there. And also a great difference when we pass away from the world of the earth, wouldn't it? Well, Joe, the bewildered state you've been in, and still are from what I can see, but he was dressing me down in a nice way, you know. Anyway, he said, let's go and sit down in front of the fire. I said, fire? I hadn't noticed the fire. I said, what do you want a fire here for if you're supposed to be in heaven? He says, we're not in heaven, you're fool. He says, we're in a condition of life or a plane of life where everything is very real and very natural to us. It is a form of heaven, perhaps, if you like. For my idea of heaven has always been this little house and our own little garden and our own little way of life. And that's what we've got here. But I said, Father, you've been dead, if you are dead, for about 25, 30 years getting on. He said, yes. He said, that's nothing, is it? When you think of time, what is 20, 25 years in time itself? And I had to admit it, it wasn't very much when you think about it. So you see, people seem to think that in 25 years that you should know all the ins and the outs and know everything. He said, I'm content to be as I am. And eventually, I suppose, I shall progress into a higher state of being. But if this suits me, until all the family are together again, then perhaps we'll begin to make some changes. But I wanted to welcome you, and Mother wanted to welcome you back into the old home, so that when you came, you'd feel at home. You'd really feel that there was something to come to, something that you remembered, something that was full of love, something which was so important to all of us. And here we are, back again as a family. And let's enjoy ourselves and be happy. And later on we'll think about other things. And that's how I came over. Of course, there's a lot more I could tell you, but I can't tell you now. But perhaps at some later date I can. I hadn't intended to come and talk about myself
at all.
That's
interesting, Mr. Morgan. Thank you. And what are you doing now on the other side? How do you spend your time?
Of course, I'm talking about what happened some while back, but what I'm doing now, I'm teaching the youngsters. I'm a school teacher, and there's another very funny thing, you know.
Yeah.
I always, as a young man, was very keen on school, and it was my ambition to be a school teacher.
Yeah.
And I always thought to myself, oh, if ever I have an opportunity, I get older, I'd like to be a school teacher. But of course, Mother and Father, they were very good, you know. They meant well. But their father had put me to engineering. And it was his ambition, I think, as a boy to be an engineer himself. And he didn't come off. And I suppose he thought he'd see it happen in me. Anyway, I suppose in my own way I was quite a good engineer. I wasn't famous or anything like that.
No.
But I was good at my job. But in my heart I always wanted to be a teacher. And now over here I am a teacher. And I have a wonderful little class of youngsters that have come over this last few years who I've been able to teach and help teach things that really matter. Not a lot of the nonsense that is often taught that has no real value. We've taught so much that is unimportant on earth.
Mm-hmm.
But here you can teach the things that are real value. Anyway, I must go. I'm very happy.
And that is how the science in which Charles Morgan spoke to us, came to an end.